The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
This
is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. Spill your under. Has been broken by Chris Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. He's the man called Sting. Man called Sting. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called Vader. And he's giving you a tater. Oh, yeah, the old theme song, Sting, from WCW, written by Jimmy Hart with my little embellishment from Vader. We always said he's the man called Vader. He's going to give you a potato, which is wrestling terms for a stiff shot. But that's irrelevant because Sting, the man, is in the WWE. And what a huge, huge, huge revelation it is. It blows my mind that he was in TNA for 10 years. And people thought it was cool, but there wasn't really a lot of pop and circumstance about it. And suddenly he comes to the WWE for 3 minutes, does a stare down with Triple H, and suddenly he's the most relevant, hottest performer in the business. That's what the WWE can do for you. Congratulations to Sting for making it finally to the WWE. I'm a huge, huge fan. I'm so excited. Synchronicity 2 is my favorite album. I think I want to see the Police at WrestleMania. I think they should put together a stable of Sting with Adam Stewart Copeland, and Summer can be in there as well. That's a totally nerdy Police joke. If you get it, you're laughing on the floor right now. If you don't, well, then don't worry about it. Congratulations to Sting. And what a Survivor Series we had. I'm on the road right now with Fozzy, so I didn't see the whole thing. Saw parts of it. Read reports. Got reports from all of you on the Twitter. At I Am Jericho, at Talk Is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, telling me how cool the main event of the show was. And the final two were Dolph Ziggler, Talk Is Jericho alumni, and Seth Rollins, who is on the show today. Absolutely. Seth Rollins is here, the hottest heel in the business. Who brings you the best guests, huh? You know what I mean? I mean, come on, consistently on a week-to-week basis. You know what's right here. YTJ's got your back, and Seth Rollins is coming up. We'll hear all about his quick rise in the WWE as part of The Shield with Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. He's got some pretty funny fan stories, and as the current Money in the Bank winner, he's got the briefcase, which he has to take with him everywhere he goes. So, of course, we'll find out where he has to take it and what he keeps inside of it. He'll also talk about his time at NXT, his original gimmick of Tyler Black, and his finishing move, where he got it from. It's many name changes. We'll talk about rock and roll music. We'll talk about so much stuff with Seth Rollins. Very, very cool guy, and what an amazing performer. He's killing it right now in the WWE, and he's going to kill it right here, right now, on Talk Is Jericho. But first, before we get to Seth, I want to thank you for using my links every time you shop at Amazon. It's the easiest way to support the show. And every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada A. So just go to PodcastOne.com. Click on the Keep Our podcast free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon, like the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Or how about my best-selling new book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Very excited about that. Finally, officially made the New York Times bestseller list. Number 4 on the sports category and number 8 in the celebrity category, ahead of Neil Young. Suck it, Neil Young. There you go. Go check out The Best in the World at What? I have no idea if you have not read it yet. It's the best of the three, according to a lot of amazing Jerichoholics out there. But listen, you can buy whatever you want on Amazon through my link, and it won't cost anything extra. No hidden fees or challenges. And hey, the holidays are coming fast, all right? Thanksgiving is just in a few days, and after that, it's Christmas time. Less than a month until Christmas time. So you know you're going to need to do some holiday shopping. If you're going to do that on Amazon, which everybody uses, you can use my link and help out my show and me in the process. Let's scratch each other's backs, okay? Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark it so you can get to these links in one easy click. And go do that now, all right? First off, if you did not hear a Slash last week on this show, and you are a music fan, a Slash fan, a Guns N' Roses fan, whatever, you need to go listen to these shows. The ratings have been good, but I think there's a lot of people who are missing out by not checking out the Slash interview. So many cool things were discussed. We discussed horror movies like Trog, The Omen, Nothing Left to Fear, which he produced. We discussed weird clowns, scoring creepy movies, future plans for Slasher Productions, how he found the conspirators, Miles Kennedy, Brent Fitz, Todd Kearns, the recording of World on Fire, whether he knows the name of his rhythm guitar player, whether he knows the last name of his rhythm guitar player, playing arenas with the conspirators, his slimy riff style, gelling with his partner in a two-guitar lineup, like Izzy Stradlin. He talks about Izzy. He talks about getting sober, putting together a proper set list, opening for the Rolling Stones in 1989 with Guns N' Roses, and why Axl Rose made him apologize on stage after the show. We discuss a Guns N' Roses reunion, plus we discuss dinosaurs, our favorite species, the weird, weird kinds of dinosaurs, and the theories as to why they are extinct. Plus, Slash tells us in-depth stories about Ray Charles, Lenny Kravitz, Michael Jackson. So much to talk about with Slash. Go back and listen to that. And also, the Page episode was amazing as well. So, we're also on tour right now with the Cinderblock Party with Texas Hippie Coalition, Shaman's Harvest. It's in the midst and drawing the highest numbers we've ever drawn in the United States. The tour has been amazing. So many filled venues, some bigger than others, but it's just been a huge success all the way across the board. We're hitting Kenosha, Wisconsin tonight at the Brat Shop. Jackal is also on that show. And on Friday the 28th, Black Friday. No, it's Rock Friday. It's Foz Friday. We'll be in Joplin, Missouri. That show is off the chain. Then we're in Lubbock, Texas on Saturday. Dallas, Texas at Trees on Sunday. Tuesday, December 2nd, we're playing 210 Capone's live in San Antonio. Destin, Florida at Club LA on December 5th. Aqua in the Rock Bar Room in Jacksonville on the 6th. Dixie's Roadhouse in Cape Coral, Florida on the 7th. House of Blues in Lake Buena Vista on the 11th. Last night of the tour, December 12th in Tampa at the State Theater. And don't forget Gainesville on the 9th as well. All of these shows, all of these information with tickets and VIPs available on FozzyRock.com. Plus the Cinderblock Party World Tour in 2015 with the Dirty Youth starts March 5th in Belfast, Ireland. Then hitting Cork in Dublin, Ireland. Then going all the way across the UK, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Brighton, Bristol, Exeter, Southampton. So many great shows. You can get tickets to all the shows and VIP tickets. We have one of the best VIP packages in the world. You will not be disappointed. Go to FozzyRock.com and check out all of that information. All right. Survivor Series. Apparently, it was a tie between Egypt and myself on the predictions. We were both 3 for 5, I think. So I'm sure Egypt is going to be harping on that. Oh, I guess I should be happy about that, that I tied with Egypt. It's not too bad. Like I said, I mean, Survivor Series, always based around the main event, and it was one of the coolest main events in recent memory with the addition of Sting to the WWE. Will he be working Triple H at WrestleMania? Will he be working Undertaker at WrestleMania? Will he do both? If I was them, I'd do Triple H this year and do Undertaker next year. Why not? Spread it out. Sting now, once again, the most popular and relevant star in the business. Congratulations, Sting. We are glad to have you. And after the police reunion, we knew we hadn't been doing much in a while, so it's good to have you back in the WWE. Yes, I'm going to beat that dead horse into the ground because it's funny and I like it. Mentioned the best in the world at what? I have no idea. There's a great story in there about rapid delivery Rory Fox, who was in a local talent, local enhancement guy who had a match with Zack Ryder, and his pants exploded in the ring, and he was left naked with nothing on. Zack Ryder and I discussed this way back a few months ago on Talk is Jericho, and Rory reached out to me via DM on the Twitter and asked me if he could come on TIJ when we were in Des Moines a couple nights ago for the Cinderblock party. He wanted to come down. He lives in the area and give his side of the story as to what really happened with the exploding tights incident. And he sees it a little bit differently than I did. And he's coming to get his revenge. Apparently, we buried him a little bit on the Zack Ryder podcast. And I did not bury him in my book. And I didn't mean to bury him if we did. But sometimes things are said. So I wanted to have Rory on to give his side of the story. So from the back of the Fozzy tour bus just a few days ago, rapid delivery, Rory Fox is here to tell us all about the exploding tights incident that left him naked with his package floating and flying in the wind. Let's check it out. Okay, so we're here in Des Moines with Rapid Fire Rory Fox. He drove up from wherever you said,
Cedar Rapids,
whatever. So famous story. It's in the best in the world at what? I have no idea. It's the story of you working with Zack Ryder. And I'm going to read it quickly from my book, how I wrote it. At SmackDown taping in Rockford, Illinois, an enhancement guy named Rapid Delivery Rory Fox was working a match with Zack Ryder. Ryder pulled him into the turnbuckle by his waistband, and suddenly, for no apparent reason, Rory's tights exploded. Yeah, that's right. They literally disintegrated into 1,000 threads of spandex, and he wasn't wearing any under tights. The poor guy, not realizing that his ball bag had just made a rapid delivery into the open air, continued the match and took a nude slingshot into the ropes. He made his way to the corner and covered his junk with both hands as the camera got a close-up of him mouthing, "Oh, God," with a pathetic look of shock on his face. Zack pulled him out of the corner and bent the naked Fox over for his swinging neckbreaker finish, giving the crowd a bird's-eye view of the always-appealing beanbag asshole combo.
Beanbag.
This is by far one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life, but I have to give the Rapid one credit. After the match, he was walking around backstage laughing about the whole thing,
right,
whereas I would have run straight out of the arena and never looked back. Rory showed a lot of balls that day, both literally and figuratively. So you're here today. You actually reached out to me on Twitter and said you wanted to come and kind of tell your side of the story. And I would like to, I mean, that's my recollection of what happened. So
yes. Lead
us through exactly what happened that day.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you, Chris, for having me. This has been a long time coming. I would like to say also that your story in the book was so much more flattering than the podcast with the writer. You guys buried me so bad on that. I felt so bad.
I don't think we buried you maliciously. I think it was just one of those, just a horrible thing, whether it was just, it wasn't maybe just you personally, but just the whole concept of what happened. It was just a horrible night. So we were in Rockford.
Yes.
It's the SmackDown. And if I did bury, I apologize. Yeah. And that's why we're here today. So,
but one thing though, I think the worst part was when you said the bald spot. It was like, I didn't have the bald spot yet. It was just I had the bleach blonde hair, and that was just my roots showing. Now I have a bald spot because this is 2014. So yeah, even Rapid Delivery's got
that
one.
Back in 2009?
2008. Yes.
So we're in Rockford, Illinois for a SmackDown taping, and you were a local guy.
Yes.
And you would come work.
Which whenever they're in the Midwest, I would always call and get booked. And
right. Okay. Yes. So you're booked in Rockford.
Yes.
And tell us, you're in a match with Zack Ryder.
Right.
And so tell us what happens.
Yeah, I got out in the ring with Zack, and everything was going great, and it came in the part of the match where I peppered him with some forearms, and he decided, like, we're almost in the center of the ring. Normally, you know, you've been working a long time, you drive him further and further to the corner, and then you grab the trunks, and then I take the buckle bump. But he did it from the middle of the ring, and he yanked so hard, it's like he took a back bump to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason why those trunks ripped. I wore those trunks everywhere, and nothing like that ever happened. And I will say, you know, what do you call it, the under?
Yeah, are you talking about the waistband or the
undertights? No, you said the undertights.
Undertights,
yeah. It's like I never thought of wearing those. It's like my trunks always worked, and I was so worried about the under trunks always showing and that not looking
which
professional.
Looks lame, right?
Yeah.
I would always hate when you'd see guys wearing their underwear and you could always see the waistband of the underwear above the trunks, right?
You see, over the years, the trunks got smaller and smaller. Like Triple H kind of brought that in with the higher cut to where you show more of the thigh.
Right.
And it's like, these trunks are too low. It's like, I don't want to have them undershorts showing. And right. Well, but now you think about it, what's worse, the undershorts or my Beanbag.
So the thing that was funny though is when he pulled you too hard.
Yeah, he pulled so hard. I thought it was a rib. I thought one of the veterans told, "Hey, let's get this kid today." I thought, you know, maybe I did something wrong in catering or anything. But I've been there so many times, and everybody was always great to me.
Yeah, of course. And you obviously.
That's why I thought it was a rib.
But what? That your pants exploded?
Yes.
How can anybody ever rib you with that? How would you know for sure it's going to happen?
But he pulled so hard. No one. I've done that spot, you know, probably 20 times in matches, and no one ever yanked that hard.
But your tights just exploded.
But you're right, though. They did.
Right.
The seam
disintegrated.
Yeah.
I remember watching it with Julie and Terry, who are the seamstresses, and they were like, that's impossible. Like, how would that even happen? I guess they just exploded. So, irregardless, so it blows up.
Yes.
And now, did you know right away that your tights had exploded?
I knew right away. In my mind, I'm thinking, like you said, oh, my God. But I was so terrified. I'm like, how are they going to use this on TV? Vince is going to be so mad at me. We're wasting their precious airtime and programming and money.
Right.
And I think I'm never coming back again. And
which is, you know, as a typical young guy just starting out, that's what you're thinking. You don't care about the fact that you're naked in the ring.
No.
You're more worried about getting heat for your tights exploding.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in the ring and you think, okay, I know, like, what did you think, like, I want to roll into the ring, or what do I, like, what were you thinking?
No, in my mind, I'm getting through this match. I'm going to cover my nuts and sell at the same time. I am finishing this match. I don't care if Zach's going to call that, okay, but I'm holding my balls with one hand while he's slingshotting me. I don't care. I'm finishing the match no matter what.
And do you recall when the camera, do you remember like saying, oh, God?
Yes.
Like, were you thinking like, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I was more petrified of what was going to happen backstage than the crowd seeing my cock and balls right there. I thought, this isn't going to be on TV, and...
Because it took a while, because you were in the corner at that point, and then he came. I think he gave you the boot in the corner.
The boot in the corner. I'm going.
And you're holding. And then he pulls you in for like a neck breaker. Yeah. Did you say anything to him? Like, my pants are gone, or
that part? It just seemed like he's doing the slingshot no matter what. Even I think it was the boot in the corner. Then it was the slingshot, and then it was that finisher he did back then. The
a swinging neck breaker or something, like a roll of dice.
I think MVP did it at some point. It's where you put the knee, your head on the knee, and you do this whole spin. And it would have been so much easier if he would have had the Rough Rider by then, because I could keep my hands on my nuts and take that leg drop Rough Rider movie.
Did he know that your pants had exploded?
I think he knew, but I think he was focusing on the crowd, you know, working the crowd, because he had something to prove. You know, this was his first chance as a singles, and this was a chance to be kind of a hard-ass heel that night, because the handsome guys, you really kind of slap around and hit, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, I don't think he knew.
Did you hear any reaction from the crowd when you were in there, or was it just all tuned out?
Oh, no. I heard that stuff. Like, I heard the screaming. It was almost like I heard some of that, like, when Ric Flair would do the old sunset flip.
Pull the pants down.
Yes. It was that kind of squeal you hear when someone's ass is showing kind of thing.
Except for this was... Yeah, front
but this
back.
Was a lot of dudes going, oh, too. So
So he hits you with the swinging neck breaker.
Yes.
And swinging nut breaker probably.
Yeah, that would work too.
And then he covers you 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
And then what happens? What did you do after that? Because I don't remember what happened.
It happened so quick. Right after he pinned me, a ref brought down a towel. I was getting covered like in the Attitude Era, like when they're covering one of the chicks up, you know, if she shows her boobs.
It's like a Val Venus thing where he's wearing a towel. So you walk out of the ring holding the towel.
Yes.
How were you feeling at that moment?
It wasn't so much humiliated. It was just more, I was just scared, like, and thinking, God, what's the odds of this? You know, of all places that my trunks are going to rip, it's going to be right here.
Like, why couldn't this have happened, like, in Kenosha at an independent show? So when you walked through the gorilla position, were people in there? Was anyone laughing? Were they?
If that was the case, I didn't really hear anything. It was more like silence. Like it was like, oh shit, nobody's saying anything. I think they did it before I got back there. I'm
trying to maybe show you some respect.
Yes.
And not laugh.
There was nothing. It was just like I had that walk of shame. You know, I heard nothing.
Now, did you show up there with any friends or anything like that? Any other independent guys?
No, I drove by myself.
When you went through and you walked down the stairs, was anybody there, or were you just kind of on your own at that point?
No, there was nobody around. Like then, it was just like me walking down the lonely road with the tumbleweeds, and
you're like a leper.
But what I do remember though, after I was dressed, and like you said, I was kind of laughing. It was you. And Hurricane made some comments, and you got that made Twitter that night too. I believe you guys put some stuff on there.
Well, maybe it wasn't Twitter. My thing that I was never malicious. It was never like, ah, what an idiot. To me, it was like the fact that you hung out. Because I remember specifically you talking with Scotty Armstrong.
Yeah.
And Scotty's super nice guy was saying,
of course.
Like, I think we talked about this on the Writer podcast where he was like, you know, so, well, now they got something, like, we got something to remember you by.
Yeah, it was
like,
nice.
How did you go up to Scotty and ask him what he thought, or how did that come about?
It's like, oh my God, Scott, what do I do? This is horrible. He's like, oh, don't worry about it, brother. It's, you know, this stuff happens. He was great about it, though. But
I remember that, like I said, to me, the biggest thing was that you stuck around. Because I remember I saw you later. You had your suit back on again. Yeah. You're walking around. And I was like, man, I would have ran out of here and never been seen again. But you stayed around. You're like, F it, man. Yeah. I'm just going to stick around. And I mean, you just, like, your mindset was whatever.
Yeah, I can't. I never thought I could leave early anyway. When I'm an extra, you're there until the end of the show, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
catches you sneaking out early, boy, that guy's not coming back. So.
Did you ever work in the WWE after that?
Actually, no, I didn't. I made it through that night. I no-sold being
naked,
smiling, laughing. Yes. But it was also, too, I was about 34, almost 35 by then, and I'm thinking, it's getting a little late, you know. Isn't the whole story like that you need to be younger, and they need to invest like 5 years before they could properly push you?
I guess, but, yeah, sure.
I don't know. I was just thinking, you know what, I'm starting to wind this down anyway. Maybe I ought to just end it here. And
is that, this is a sign.
Yes. I was like, I was worried, though. I didn't think they'd book me again. But I ran into Al Snow at one of the indie shows I did here in Des Moines. And he actually said, because Mick Foley's known for ribbing him, too, he used to give him the vertical suplex, right? And he'd hang on to a singlet, and his nuts would show the whole time. And Al goes, Rory, do you know how many times the fans have seen my balls and all this stuff? It's not the end of the world. And I was like... I was like, so thank you, Al.
Were you kind of known for that for a while? Like, did the word get around in the indies that you're the guy that
yes.
is naked in the ring?
Yes.
Did you ever use it as an angle?
Well,
on an indie show?
I was trying to pitch that as an angle. Now I'd be like, I try to find out how many ways could I have a wardrobe malfunction. That could be a gimmick for a while. I know.
Sure.
Whatever works, you know, you got to capitalize on whatever, you know, turn a negative into a positive, like this whole situation.
Right.
If that wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't be on your podcast.
I
know.
I'm
out
here,
like you said on that, I just saw it the other day, the Zach Wilde roast.
Yeah.
You know, that was so great. That's a negative into a positive.
That's right.
I've been a Jerichoholic since 97, so hey, this is great.
It worked out good. Had your tights not exploded, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
Right,
I'd just been another indie guy.
So, and you said that now, I mean, and once again, like I said, thumbs up for sticking around and much respect for that. And you
Thank
said you,
you
got out
much.
Of wrestling for a while.
4 years.
And now you're starting to get back in again?
Yes. 4 years ago in December, when my very last match was here for 3X Wrestling here in Des Moines, and I dropped the heavyweight title to a guy twice my size. I think, you know what, this is time to wrap it up. I'm in management right now. I got all kinds of crazy hours, and I can't just come and half-ass it once a month, because that's how I wasn't trained. You know, I wasn't trained like that by Les Thatcher. Sure. It's like, if you can't go, stay out of the ring.
100% or don't do it at all.
Exactly.
But now you're starting to get back into it again for fun and just to get your...
Yes, I would totally embrace the weekend warrior thing now, man.
That's great.
I can't tell you, there's nothing like being in that ring and under those lights yet.
Absolutely.
Even if it's 100 people. And it took me 4 years to realize it, and I love it.
So, and you're based out of Cedar Rapids?
Yes, out of Cedar Rapids, but I mostly do the bookings here in Des Moines for 3X Wrestling.
How can people get a hold if they want to book you?
On Twitter, it's @RoryFox.
@RoryFox. So if you're looking to book a guy with a lot of experience, good guy.
A good hand.
For vicious, good, a hell of a hand. And one of the most famous stories of all time in the ring. Did you ever see the match back on TV? Because they did show it.
Yes.
You know that, right?
I found a link to it. And after the podcast, if you want to see it, you can see where in the ring Zack Ryder's trying to pull my trunks to take that bump. So.
Mm-hmm.
But Zack's a great guy. He's tremendous, and much respect to him. But he was 23 years old at the time and didn't know everything.
Right.
And he pulled a little early and a little too hard. And I'm sticking to it.
And they showed the match, but it was close-ups after that.
Mostly
just like, even Ryder's finish, it was just a close-up of like his upper chest and face, basically.
Yes, if you weren't there that night, you wouldn't even known.
Right.
You just would have heard this crazy cackle and catcalls at a certain point, you know?
But, well, Rory, I'm glad you could come down here, man. @RoryFox, if you want to get a hold of him. He's a good guy, and a true warrior for sticking around that night, man.
Thank you. Looking forward to Fozzy tonight.
All right. Well, there you go. Rapid delivery, Rory Fox, giving his dissertation his opinion, his explanation as to what really happened. And apparently Zack Ryder was the cause of all that by pulling him too hard into the turnbuckle. Rory Fox, a good guy, came to give his side of the coin, his side of the story. Always cool to have guys like that on the show. If you want to check out Rory, upcoming Friday, December 5th, 3X Wrestling is going to be at the DM Social Club, which I believe is in Des Moines, Iowa. And the main event is Scrap Daddy AP versus Jeremy Wyatt 1, plus Rory Fox will take on Bradley Charles. That is a huge, huge match. It's the Holiday Havoc 5, Friday, December 5th at the Des Moines Social Club, Come and Go Theater, 901 Cherry Street in Des Moines, Iowa. Head on over there and say hi to Rapid Delivery Rory Fox and check out that show. Support your local wrestling company. Support the Rapid one, Rory Fox. All right, Seth Rollins is next.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so we are here at the Cajun Dome in Lafayette. I actually procured the, that's like the conference room, man. There's this giant table in here.
I know, I'm at the head of it now. You're that at the I think table, about
yeah,
it.
Running the corporation. I'm with Seth Rollins. Very cool to do this. We worked last night in Boston, and the original plan was for us to work at the Night of Champions pay-per-view, and they changed it, but we've had a couple matches, and it's always cool when you find somebody new that you can, I mean, that you can work with, have good chemistry with.
Yeah,
and you got a really cool style. It reminds me of, I mean, you're a big guy, but you still do a lot of cool flying moves and all that sort of thing.
I grew up watching, like, Shawn Michaels, obviously, yeah. Was, I think, for both of us, mm-hmm. the guy, and he was someone who, he was not the biggest guy, but he never, to me, never seemed small. So, like, him and Eddie Guerrero and a lot of the guys that you kind of came up with and mm-hmm. stuff like that, like, that's just a style that I patterned myself after. Like, that's what I watched when I was growing up. So, I was like, well, I think that's what I want to try to do. And I knew I was never going to be Hulk Hogan. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm never going to be 6'6", dropping leg drops, brother. But, like, I was like, I like to do that. It was always exciting for me, and so it's cool. And then, you know, coming up in Ring of Honor, that's just what we did.
Yeah, that's the kind of style, like Ring of Honor being like the modern day ECW almost.
Yeah,
where you had a lot of guys that came through, you know, the system, maybe working in Japan or working in different places. Ring of Honor had the same vibe, right? Like all the guys that you worked with and the top guys had worked a little bit in Japan or worked
yeah, they
over.
Just worked everywhere. Yeah. And we were always infusing like Japanese talent too. Gabe Sapolsky, the booker there, was kind of a big, I don't know, he's a big fan for that's the style and stuff like that. So when I was there, we had a partnership with Pro Wrestling Noah when they were doing well mm-hmm. there. So he would bring in like Kenta, who's now with us, and Mare Fuji and Go Shizaki, and they would just trade talent from time to time. We would send some Noah guys. There's some guys over there to do Noah, but like When I got in there, I'd only been wrestling for like 3 years. So
really?
For me, it was like those guys and the talent there at the time, the Daniel Bryans, Nigel McGuinness, Cesaro was there, Chris mm-hmm. Hero. Like these guys for me were like I felt like I was out of place. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, I mean, it was a great experience for a guy my age to just go in there and kind of soak up all that information. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
From these guys who'd been to different areas of the world and traveled and worked these styles and stuff like that. But it was certainly intimidating, to say the least.
Did you do any kind of like, probably not, but like gymnastics or anything like that when you were growing up? Because you got some really good springs in your legs.
I had a trampoline.
Did you?
Yeah. No, my parents were like, or my mom, like, I think the trampoline was like my parents got divorced when I was young, and they were like, here's a trampoline. Feel better. Entertain yourself. Don't be depressed teenager in your, you know, in your bedroom. So like, I just spent a lot of time on the trampoline, and that's when I started like trying flips mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I figured out how to do like all the nonsense off.
I think all of us had the old trampoline thing.
Yeah, know? It was like maybe I don't know if it was like that just that generation or whatever, but that's when they like came to prominence, and I'm sure a lot of kids got really heard on them, but so I was fortunate.
Who were you watching when you were growing up? Eddie and Sean were your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, like, I always thought it was weird working in Ring of Honor because I was, like, one of the first guys to work there that was a fan of the product before. Because, like,
a fan of Ring of Honor?
A fan of Ring of Honor, you know what I mean? So, like, when I was a little kid, Hulk Hogan. But then, like, as I grew up and started watching the business as kind of an art form, mm-hmm. it was, like, Sean, Brett, WCW, you and Eddie, and a lot, you know, Ray, Psicosis, stuff like that. So, like, those were the guys who I was watching. And then when I was, like, 13 or 14, that's when wrestling's kind of started to be on the internet mm-hmm. or so. And that's when, like, you could go to, like, Click Wrestle or, like, these torrent sites, and you could download matches. And it took forever because it was,
yeah.
dude, it was, like, you watch the percentages, and it would take, like, 3 hours to download one match. That's when I discovered, like, independent wrestling and Ring of Honor and, like, Daniel Bryan, Low-Key, mm-hmm. who was AJ Styles, like, those guys. So I started to be a fan of that style. Even, like, the Amazing Red, the Briscoes were wrestling when they were 16. So, like, I was watching their matches, these, like, CZW best of the bests. Like, I mean, it was probably terrible wrestling, but they were just doing all these cool spots that right. I had never seen, like, these super athletic things that I was like, holy crap. So, like, when I got into Ring of Honor, like, I was kind of already a fan of the style.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, one of the first, I think, that I can think of, first guys who, like, as a teenager, you know, watched the product on, like, YouTube or something like mm-hmm. that before I got in there and started doing it. It was kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, I remember it was, like, a generation older, but I remember watching Stampede Wrestling. That was the one that you could get, like, access it in Canada. And it was different from WWE because there was smaller guys. Mm-hmm. And even though I didn't know if wrestling was a work or whatever it was, I just knew that those guys were faster, those guys were quicker, and I was not... Like you said, like, I'm not Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I'm not going to be that, but I can be Owen Hart, or I can be Chris Benoit, or I can be Johnny Smith, or any of these little, like, little guys. I say they're 225 pounds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it gave me some inspiration to know that I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. I felt the same way. And then, like, when I got there, I said, like, I was like, well, now I'm here, and I was pretty intimidated. But, like, I also was confident enough that, like, I've been doing it for a little while, and I kind of had a like, I picked up on it pretty quick. Like, mm-hmm. Once I got in the ring with those guys, I didn't feel like I was a step behind. You know what I mean? And that gave me – that's just, like, a part of building confidence as
sure.
far as, like, becoming a top performer, I think. Even on the independent level, like, that's kind of crucial for a lot of today's independent wrestlers. If there's anybody out there listening, like, having that presence about you and, like, building confidence from match to match and going from, you know, town to town and doing these little independent shows, like – you know, don't be afraid to have some confidence when you're in the ring. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Don't be afraid to involve yourself and work a crowd, however you know how to do that, you know? So.
This is a great point. When you guys came up here as The Shield, I know you and Ambrose had worked the scene, worked a Ring of Honor in Japan, etc. And Roman, I'm not sure if he worked as much, but he still grew up in the business.
Yep.
You guys had a presence about you, even though you were the new guys. Not that it was disrespectful, but you guys had some confidence. You had an air of stardom about you, and that's why that worked right off the bat. That's why The Shield really popped. And even in the dressing room, you guys, you knew who you were and what you were trying to be.
Yeah, that's really important, I think, for guys trying to make a mark, especially in our industry where it's very ego driven and mm-hmm. stuff like that. If you and there's a way to go about it without kind of, I mean, they always say, you know, you got to step on some toes and stuff like that to get to the top. But, like, I feel like there's a way to go about it without being like a complete douchebag. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a way to go about it where you don't just have to be a jerk and throw everybody beside you. Like, there's a way to have confidence and just be comfortable when you're working with guys that are already established. Mm-hmm. That's important, I think. And I don't know if it's anything you can ever really be taught necessarily, but the time that Ambrose and I spent on the indies going from town to town, basically having to get over from scratch every single night, like, that, I feel like that was extremely important in, like, developing that confidence that we're able to kind of exude on screen as well. And Roman, he's an aberration, really. Like you said, he's been around the business his whole life and stuff like that, but, like, I think he learned that from kind of being actually from football, to be honest with you, because he's, if you've ever been around him in the locker room, he's, you know, he likes to be like the dude. He's got his radio set up.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Like, he likes to be like, he likes that atmosphere, and he likes to be the, you know, I'm the man type of thing. So like he exudes that confidence just as a human being. Like, it's just how he is. And I think maybe that developed from kind of playing football and having to be the alpha male in that situation.
Plus, I think it probably helped that the three of you guys came in together. Like, you have the three of you to rely upon. You're going to bitch to each other or vent to each other, or you're doing this as three friends, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was a gang mentality. And, like, we were all – developmental is a frustrating process if you're down there for a very long time. Like, I never did,
no. Yeah,
it's a frustrating process because it's such a – When you're just a touring wrestler, like, it's every day is different. There's like some excitement involved. You're out there kind of doing your own thing, but like being developmental, it's very like, and not to knock it, but it's just day after day. It's a lot of the same stuff, Groundhog Day type stuff. So it's like, it's very frustrating, especially when you've got that confidence and you've, I was already wrestling for 6 years when I got there, and I had, you know, I had a bit of an ego when I got down there just because I was chomping at the bit to get out of there. You know what I mean? Like, I came here to, you know, work in WWE and with you guys and stuff like that. So I was ready to get out of there, and you got to take a step back. Like, mentally have to take a step back and prepare yourself for what's about to happen. So, like, that's very frustrating. But we were all three of us were very frustrated. So when the time came to, like, okay, here you go, guys, there was no way we were going to let that opportunity, like, go by the wayside. Like, it just wasn't going to happen, you know, and we all had that mindset. And to lean on each other is pretty helpful too. Mm-hmm. You know, a kind of a gang mentality. Like, we traveled together. We talked from town to town. We talked about everything together. We were, you know, pretty much inseparable for the first couple of years. So that definitely helps. And I think it cultivates, it cultivates something, some sort of sharing of information and stuff like that, and ideas and concepts. It seems to cultivate success, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like you said, you have someone you can rely on that's in the same boat as you. Like, when I first came to WWE, I was, besides Big Show, I was the first guy to kind of make the big jump from WCW. Yeah. And I was by myself. Like, I had no friends. And, you know, talk about a lot of pressure and heat. And, you know, you can't really talk to anybody because everyone's kind of looking at you as the new guy. But you mentioned how it was frustrating when you first came up here. How was it for you being, because I believe you were a Ring of Honor champion.
Yeah.
So you're Tyler Black, right?
Yep.
Ring of Honor champion. Then you get signed to WWE and get sent down to the minor leagues, basically.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Like, you mentioned frustrating. Was it something that, did you agree to it right away? How did you kind of consign yourself to that?
Yeah, I'd always wanted to work for WWE. Now, likewise, I always wanted to work for Ring of Honor. Like I said, I was a fan there. So, like, but I knew, for me, Ring of Honor was like a means to an end. Like, I wanted to be at WWE. So, like, when I got the Ring of Honor title, I almost thought of it as leverage in a way. Like, I was like, okay, I'm in this top position now. This is where I can maybe parlay this into, otherwise I had never talked to WWE before that. Like, I literally had never sent in a tape, never done,
never came for a
tryout or dark match or anything like that, you know? So I was like, yep, shot in the dark. I think I have a name well enough now that I might be able to parlay this into something. So when they offered me the developmental deal, I was like, I kind of knew what I was getting myself into, but it took much longer.
How did you get
the
deal, though, in the first place?
I was actually talking with Terry Taylor at the time, who was working. He's now with us down in developmental, but he was working with TNA at the time, and I was kind of going back and forth between he and Johnny, who is Johnny Laurinaitis, who was doing the talent relations.
Oh,
so
you were working with both?
Yeah, I was. Well, I mean,
trying to get the best
TNA,
deal.
Yeah, TNA had approached me about the deal, and I was kind of like, I was interested in working there. They offered me a really good deal. They were, you know, Dixie Carter called me. We had a nice conversation, stuff like that. So it was good, but no offense to them, that's just not where I wanted to be. You know what I mean? I knew where my heart lied, and I wanted to be with WWE. So I positioned them against each other a little bit. But, I mean, I didn't really have a choice. There was no better option, you know what I mean? So I talked to Johnny. I sent some stuff to him. He was very upfront about, hey, you know, we like your stuff. We think you need to be polished a little bit. We'd like to give you an opportunity to go down to Tampa and live and train. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll do that. And it wasn't like a consolation necessarily. Of course, I would have loved to have just hopped on the main roster and got started. But in retrospect, it was probably the best thing for me for a lot of reasons. I mean, I did not that I didn't learn anything down there, because I certainly did. There's just a wealth of knowledge between Steamboat. Dr. Tom was down there. Norman Smiley, Joey Mercury was down there when I was down there. So, like, you look at all the trainers. DeMott came on at the end. All the trainers were super helpful, super beneficial. And I learned a lot about myself while I was down there, and just, like, how to kind of navigate the political system that is.
Like life lessons. Almost,
yeah, life lessons, yeah. And it like I said, it also, like, being frustrated ended up being a good thing. You know what I mean? To the point where, like, when it was time to go with the shield, it was like, boom. You know what I mean? Like, you're just loading. You're just cocking this gun for 2.5 years, just holding it for as long as you can. And then, boom, as soon as you let it go, it just explodes everything. And you put Roman and Dean, who had the same frustration in there as I did. We were just going to go. So it was kind of a cool deal. And like I said, it was frustrating on a day-to-day basis, because you're doing a lot of the same stuff over and over, and you're not reprogrammed, but you're, I mean, I know how to do hip tosses, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, when you get in the ring and learn how to do an arm drag, and it's like, I've done these before.
Yeah, I've done thousands. I do them in my sleep, most likely. So, like, that part was frustrating, and that was the only thing. Like, other than that, it was a pretty cool experience, and like I said, looking back, it was probably for the better, but, like, at the time...
Do you think it was almost an ego check as well, just to see, like, can these guys leave that kind of, I don't know, like this, sometimes guys come in and they have an ego because they've been the champion here, there, and everything. Yeah. Do you think they send, because everyone now has to go through development?
Everybody, yeah, everybody.
You think it's just to kind of see what the mental state of the people are too sometimes?
Oh, I'm sure it is. But again, like, I think that's for the better. Like, I don't know that guys who don't go through that system, like, it's like I said, it was good to have a lot of confidence in what you do. Like, that's part of being successful, but it's also, like, it's good to have your ego checked from time to time. Mm-hmm. It's good to be humble and have to learn how to do that. And I think, for better or worse, that's probably some sort of consideration that they take into account when they send guys who are in my position down to developmental. I don't know if it's might be just a byproduct of what they do down there, but for whatever reason, it seems to work. Guys come up here and they have a completely different perspective. And plus, I mean, I'm down there for 2.5 years, so when I finally get up here, I don't feel like it was gifted to me. I'm like,
right.
I'm so grateful that I finally gotten the opportunity. You know,
wow.
What I mean?
So you were down there for 2.5 years?
About 2 years, yeah.
Wow.
I ended up, like, started in September of whatever year, and I finished up my developmental contract after our first WrestleMania, which was WrestleMania 29. So, like, that would have been 2.5 years afterwards. So
it was a little bit of time spent down there for
sure. Yeah,
I wasn't aware it was that long.
Yeah, it was long, man.
Because, I mean, there is a WWE style. It's the famous WWE style. And people that don't have never worked here don't quite get it. But it's the same. Like, when I came up here, I didn't know anything. I thought I'd been working 9 years around the world. But coming up here, there's a separate way of doing things.
Yep.
And you know, you had to learn that, but for you, you obviously learned it, but then still 2 years of learning it. Wow.
Yeah. And the good thing about it is, like, they don't, they're not just throwing guys into the mix. You know what I mean? Like, that's the cool thing about it is, like, you get to learn that style. You get to kind of perfect it now that they have NXT, which is essentially a smaller version of what we do up here. You get to learn exactly how it's done, how they want it done, and how to be good at it. Because it's completely different, and it's just as difficult as any other style I've ever learned. You know what I mean? There's different challenges that go along with it, but it was a long time down there for sure. And it sucked because, like, I lived in Tampa. You live in Tampa,
yeah.
Right? Like, Tampa's a great city.
Yes.
But, like, when you're forced to be somewhere, it feels like a prison.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like you have these shackles on you. And, like, now when I go back and we just did, like, the Battleground pay-per-view there. And, like, I was there for just a day or so. But, like, I was like, man, I miss Tampa.
Yeah, it's
like,
a nice place.
It's a great place. It's, like, right on the water. It's got a lot of good food and, like, you know.
Was it hard, like, if you, like, you had a group of guys in NXT, I'm sure other people got called up before you did. Did people get called up sometime? You'd be like, what? Like, he got called up and I'm still here?
Yeah, absolutely. Because people would find, like, a niche for themselves. A role.
Like,
before I did. Even someone who's my friend, Cesaro, actually, because he's unreal. He literally got in there. I think he was on TV like 6 months later, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't know how it happened. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but, and he's the man.
Of course not.
I'm not dogging him at all. Purely me just being jealous and envious of like, oh, come on, man. What? Like I could be up there too.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, absolutely. He's an example of one where I was just like, and he wasn't one where I was like scratching my head. He was like, oh, I totally get it.
Sure.
But I was also like, Come on.
So how did the whole Shield idea get pitched to you?
The Shield idea never really got pitched to us. It was like just one day I did a when I was NXT champion, they did a tour of Egypt, which was just Cairo for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like some rumblings when I got back from the tour that like they were going to do something with me, or there was going to be three of us or four of us. They were talking about calling up at the same time. And then like the next, either that week at TV or the week after, I remember they had brought, it was Big E, Roman, myself and Dean all up at the same time. So we were like, we thought it was going to be a foursome at first. Could you imagine Big E in a big black, like tactical vest
team outfit? Yeah.
As much as he sweats, like just in life, he would not be able to survive in something like that. But so we thought it was going to be like a foursome, and then you know we talked to the guys up here. They're like, no, that's not. It's we got something in mind for the three of you. Big E's like a separate deal,
mm-hmm.
And so we were I think originally scheduled to do Hell in a Cell. We were going to debut at Hell in a Cell, which was the night like Brad Maddox was like the,
mm-hmm. He was the GM.
He was the shoddy referee. He was a shoddy referee at that point. And then he like gave Ryback the low blow or something that.
Against Punk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were gonna do that, but that got pushed back. And we ended up like it was one of those things where like, here, we have this idea for you. We're not quite sure what it is. We're not going to tell you, but you're here. Maybe we'll do something. And like, I remember being at the building all day like, just kind of like waiting for someone to come tell us like what we were going to do. And then like no one did and it never happened. And then we like, oh, maybe it'll happen tomorrow on Raw or something. And like then they talked to us. We're like, no, we're going to push it back, I think, till Survivor Series. So we're talking 4 weeks of like, oh, no. No. Like, don't do this.
Because you always think the worst.
Of course you assume the worst. Like, oh, they kiboshed the whole thing. You know, maybe somebody's not sold on it. Like, who knows what it is. So, like, we were just literally, like, purgatory for 4 weeks. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, are we going to go? Like, and we're all thinking, like, man, we can't go back down there. Like, now that we're here.
I won't go.
Yeah, I won't. You can't make me. And so, like, finally, like, we got the Survivor Series and the whole concept was sort of explained to us and stuff like that. And, it was just essentially.
How was it explained?
Literally, I think we were initially the idea, and I don't know exactly how it got pitched, but I believe the idea was initially that we were supposed to be a security force for Punk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, like when he was working with Ryback, he was continuous. This is when during his like 400 some odd day reign.
And Ryback was super over at that time
super
as a babyface too.
Yeah, and Punk was just like avoiding him at all costs. And I think they just needed. I feel like looking back on it, we might have just been like you know the guys to feed to Ryback. Like when Punk, you know, so the Punk could go do other stuff.
Yeah.
Just so they weren't having matches every single week. So we were supposed to be like a security force. I remember when we got to the building, they had, have you seen your costumes? No. Okay. So go to the wardrobe. Well, we go to wardrobe. We got these pants. We got these awful turtlenecks. Like, I don't know why we had turtlenecks. They were literally straight turtlenecks. Like what you would, like what your like uncle would wear to a terrible Christmas party or something like that. And then like we had shields. We had these big plastic
like
riot
literal
shields.
Like Game of Thrones shields.
But not like that cool. Like you know, like plastic, like a riot. Right. Like if you were to stop a riot after the Canadians lost Game 7 or something
yeah,
like
right.
that, and they were tipping cars over and like you had tear gas. Like that's the shield. And it said shield on it. And we had the sticks, the clubs too. And like I distinctly remember we were walking the path that we were going to run, and we had these shields and these clubs, and we're walking down the thing, and Vince he's by the ring, and he's like, he looks over, and he's, oh, why, you can't kick his ass by yourself? And we're sitting here just looking like doofuses with these shields and clubs, and we're like, yeah, we can. And we just throw the stuff down. And so then that, luckily that was all gone. We still had the rotten turtlenecks. But, yeah, it was just like, boom, Survivor Series, you're off and running. And then I don't know what the plan was from then till the TLC pay-per-view, but in between there, Punk got hurt.
Oh, okay.
He got injured on like a – I think they did like a ladder match, some sort of match on Raw with Ryback where he took like a crazy bump on the ladder that was like all awkward and stuff like that. And he ended up not being able to do the TLC pay-per-view, so they stuck us in there with Hell No, which was Brian and Kane at the time, mm-hmm. and Ryback. And this was our first match. Like, none of the WWE audience has never seen us do anything but run in and beat the crap out of guys. And, like, it was in Barclays in Brooklyn, which was the first time we had done that building. And, you know, we had all the toys to play with and mm-hmm. kind of this crazy ambiance of a new building, three guys that have never seen wrestle on television before. So we had, like, it was a good crowd, too, in that area. It was a crazy energy and a lot of you know, Ambrose and I had a little bit of that fan base in that Northeast kind of area. So, like, and Brian as well. So, like, there was just a crazy energy about that match. And I remember, like, 5 minutes into it, it was one of those where you're just like, oh, this is going to be, really good, man.
All the fruit is lined up.
Yeah,
jackpot.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, exactly.
I love how they had you come to the ring with shields.
Literally with shields that said shield. It was so.
Like, there's somebody that's employed to actually come up with these type of things. You know, like put them in the shield.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there had to be a group that discussed this, and somebody okayed it, and like then everyone was like, "Yeah, that's a great idea." And those people have jobs and get paid.
Yes, they do.
Insane, right? I don't know how that happens.
It's the same people when I was trying to think of a new name for my finisher because Vince didn't like the Lion Tamer.
Oh heavens!
They gave me a list of names. It was like the Solid Shooter, the Rock and Roll Finisher, the feeling herder. Like this is like someone said, I'm gonna hurt your feelings with the feeling herder. Like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they had the same problem when the curb stomp.
Oh.
Yeah, the same thing. They were trying to come up with when I was in NXT, I called it the blackout, which I thought was fine. It was kind of like a little ode to my former name.
Right.
And it made sense. It's, you know, stomp somebody's head into the mat and knock them out. So I was like, well, why can't we just do that? And whoever was you know, I don't know who I was even talking to. I was emailing somebody, and they're like, oh, well, we just want to come up with something new. I'm like, okay, whatever. So, like, they send me this list of names and stuff like that. And it's I wish I could remember some of them, yeah. But it was the same type of crap. And I was like, holy shit, what are we talking about here? Like, for 1 week, they called it the peace of mind. And Cole said it, and I didn't okay it. I never okayed it. It was like one of those things where I was like, yeah, it's all right, I guess, you know. And they, whoever, you know, heard that said, oh, okay, we're going to call it that tonight. So they called it that on one of these, maybe a SmackDown or something like that. And I remember, like, Vince heard it for the first time then. He was like, what? In the headset, he's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's a curb stomp. We're calling it a curb stomp. So he
had heard that name curb stomp before?
I think
he just came up with it on the spot?
I think that just like that's how it had been referred to.
Gotcha.
As like that's what you called the move, the way you would call like a you know, before you name a suplex, you know what I mean?
Sure,
yeah, it's just called the suplex. It's like that's just how it was referred to in passing.
Gotcha.
So like he's like, no, that's just what we're going to call
peace
it.
Peace of mind.
Yeah, peace of mind.
Which should be spelled PIECE, like it's a piece of your mind.
Yeah, like a piece of your mind. Yeah, I was like, oh, man.
The Iron Maiden album cover, which is cool for them.
Yeah, that's fine for them. Yeah. Not so much for me.
How about the name Seth Rollins? How did that come about?
It was one of those things where, you know, you get to developmental and they want you to change your name because they want to brand you, and I get all that. And I remember, like, trying my damnedest to, like, I was like, can I just spell Tyler Black different? Can we do something? Like, because I was partial to it, you know what I mean? So like,
it's your name. You'd built it up for 6 years or whatever.
Yeah. So I was like, ah, God, it's like it's an easy brand. Like, it's you know, Black. It's very simple. Like, I don't know. I was fine with it. And they were like, no. So, I made a list of a bunch of first names. And Rollins was Henry Rollins, Black Flag. He's a cool dude. Always like. Just someone whose ideology I was just highly entertained by, and just, I mean, if you've probably listened to
him. Yeah, totally.
To his
spoken word stuff.
Yeah, it's hilarious, and he's just a cool
cat.
Yeah,
he's great.
And so I threw that one out there, and Seth was one of the, Dusty Rhodes loved Seth. He couldn't ever say it properly because of his lisp, you know?
Thith.
Oh, Thith, I love it. It's smooth.
T-H-E-T-H.
Thith. But yeah, he loved it. So we went with, that's just what we went with. That's just where it
it's funny. There's a lot of guys. I talked to Zach Ryder on the show. He did the same thing. A list of first names and a list of last names, you know, and just pick one and put the other. You know, it's actually last night, you talk about guys pronouncing your name wrong. Fit came up to me when we were in Boston. And he's like, because I was working with Wyatt, but then he said, we're going to change. You're going to work with Zeth. And I was like, at first I was like, okay, do you mean Zeb? He doesn't even work. And then, are you saying Zeth? He's like, yeah, Zeth. I'm like, Seth? He's like, yeah, Zeth. I said, Seth. He said, what did I say? I said, you said Zeth. It's Seth with the S. Yeah. So I had to tell Fit how to pronounce your name.
Explain it.
Yeah, Zeth.
Now, I wonder if he like... Wonder how he got that. Like, did he see it with Z? Somebody
maybe it's an Irish thing or something. I don't know. Maybe he can't pronounce the letter S in that.
And now
way.
That I think about it, I don't know if I've ever heard him. Like, I've never had a conversation with him where we exchange names.
He's not completely sure how to say your name. That's why.
Hopefully, after last night, you said he would straight.
Know. Yeah, exactly. So another cool thing that was really synonymous with the Shield is that you guys would come down through the crowd.
Yeah. That was fun.
Tell us about that, because I had to do that a couple times and. You know, you come down, especially as a heel, as soon as you walk by, of course, someone's patting you in the back of the head or spitting on you, slapping you.
Throwing popcorn in your way.
Did you ever have any issues with that, or were they pretty cool?
I feel like Roman, for some reason, had more than anybody, and I don't know why. But of all the guys to pick on, the three of us, you pick on the giant tattooed Samoan.
Samoan, yeah.
Like, what are you doing? But, he was always the anchor of it, and, like, for whatever reason, I would have issues where, like, sometimes people would, you know, pat you in the chest. And we would have – sometimes in the crazy markets, we would have people, like, hop out in front of us. You know what I mean? But they didn't know what to do. Yeah, they didn't know what to do. They'd just hop out in front of us, and they'd throw their hands in the air.
Hey.
And then they'd freeze. And then 2 seconds later, one of our – Muriel would just grab him, you know. And
yes.
Excuse me. Get out of the way. We would have more issues up in the in the concourse.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
because we had to station up there. We had to go up early and sit there, and like it was becoming, because as soon as one person knows, everybody knows. So there's no way to keep it a secret. And like towards the end there, it was getting, it would get crazy where they would have to have like all the local security. They'd form like a little circle or semicircle around us and kind of block us into the VOM there. But dude, the fans were just going nuts.
You'd have a mob scene
in the concourse
area.
They'd be up above kind of coming down the stairs and like, you were talking hundreds and hundreds of people like just leaving their seats and coming to see us. You know what I mean? And we're not doing anything cool. We're just like
waiting for a cue.
We're just wetting our hair, getting super wet and like just doing like push-ups, and Ambrose is like punching the air and stuff like that. So like we're not doing anything cool, and like, but they were there, and like they would push. Luckily we never had any jumpers and no one had to get hurt.
This Shield was very wet. All three of you guys would always have the super
a lot of wetness. I mean, Roman and I, it's really all about not having poofy hair.
Yeah.
That's the whole.
I get it.
You worked your whole career with poofy hair. I don't know how you did it.
It was terrible because my hair, like in the dryness, it would look cool. But you come down here, like in New Orleans, Louisiana, forget it. Poof city.
Yeah. And when you would, it would get in your mouth and choke on it. And then I was trying to, like, I'm laying on the mat.
Worst.
Like, pulling hair out of my
running
throat.
The ropes, and you'd hit and the hair would go in your face. And like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. It was mostly just, you're mostly just about keeping the hair
wet. And not getting, looking like an idiot, right?
Not just. And by the end of the matches, sometimes when we would have the six-mans, I would spend so much time on the apron, you know, just because you're tagging in and out, that like my hair would just, under the lights, it would just dry and expand and become this insane, like Albert Einstein. And Ambrose is just unkempt. He didn't have long hair, but he was so unkempt that when his hair would go, his bang would just...
Everywhere.
Yeah, it was just like this terrible mess. So like for us, it was just about, you know, it was a little bit about aesthetics. Sure, everyone, you know, Bret Hart would have not looked nearly as cool if he wasn't soaking wet when he came out. But like at the same time, it's also about function. You're trying to survive out there.
I remember we had a match with the Ziggler one time, and he was like, we were going over it, and we only had a couple minutes because something changed or someone was late, and he's like, I can't pay attention. There's no match unless I wet my hair. I'll be right back. So the hair wetting was first. The match was second.
Second, yeah.
The hair's wet. We can work the rest out.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Sometimes that's the case, man.
It's funny you mentioned her name, and I've never mentioned her on the show before. You mentioned Muriel.
Yeah.
I've been here for 15 years. We've had so many security guards come and go. She is by far the best security guard ever.
Oh, she's awesome. Like, she's great.
Like, she's not big. She's a big boned, but she's taller than I am.
Yeah, she's
You know, black lady, and she's very nice and sweet, but man, if someone gets too close, she barks, and it's like your mother yelling at you, and people are scared to death of her.
Yeah. We did a promo on SmackDown as the Shield, like, I don't remember when it was, but I picked up the microphone, and I went to say one word, and I said the first line, and before I know it, there's some girl screaming, jumper. She came from, and she was coming down the aisle, and she had made it to the ring, and like was about to. I don't know if she stopped. She was. I don't think she thought she was going to get this far. And I don't. She was screaming. I think she was in love with Roman.
Yeah.
Something like that. And Roman, I love you. And before you know it, Sassy.
Sassy
Muriel, we call her Sassy. Yeah. She just comes into the picture and just like takes this girl, just boom, just barrels her over and takes her, like, just kicking and screaming by the hair. And yeah, she's a big, scary lady, and not in a big, like,
yeah, not fat, just big.
Yeah, yeah, she's
like a big bone lady.
She could take you right now. You listening, she could take you, I guarantee.
Yeah, it's funny how you mentioned that too. A lot of people at times we call them jumpers. They jump over the railing or jump in your way. And then, like you said, not really too sure what to do.
They have no clue, no plan beyond getting over the railing. No one expects to get like further than they do. You know what I mean? They're expecting to get attacked immediately, and like when something else is going on, and security's not there right away, it's like they hop over and they're like at the railing, and they're like,
and then they realize, it's enemy territory,
and then they're done. Yeah. Do you ever have anybody get all the way into the ring?
I had a couple times. The one that I had. We were in Las Vegas, and I was in the ring looking at Steve and Rock. It was me and Undertaker. And I was looking at Steve and Rock, and I looked away for a second, and I got punched in the face. And I remember thinking, how did Steve – first of all, why did he punch me so hard? Second of all, how did he get down so fast? And I turn around, and it was a guy standing there, just like you said. Now he's like, oh, my God. And, dude, I reared back, and you could see it was on Raw. And as I rear back, and just as I start punching, they cut the camera to Rock or something like that.
Oh, no.
And, dude, I nailed this guy, and I took him over the rail, and it's this old security guard named Jimmy Tillis.
Yeah.
And he was trying to grab – and I remember the guy was kind of half over the rail, and I was using his balls as a punching bag. Then Steve came over and he's like, kid, it's not worth it. Come here. And I was like, how bad are things when Steve Austin is the voice of reason?
Yeah, he's not worth it.
He's not worth it, kid. So. Yeah, but people make it through sometimes, man. But so you're talking about the Shield. Guys got over so huge. It was something different. It was something cool when you finally got rid of the turtlenecks and implemented like the bulletproof vests or the SWAT team stuff. I mean, it was a really cool. I mean, you guys shot to the top of the company within weeks. Within a very, very short period of time.
Yeah, pretty quick. Yeah, we got real, real fortunate. Not that injuries were ever fortunate, but like I said, when Punk went out, we got the opportunity to have the match at TLC, stole the show. And then Punk was working with Rocky, and we got a little bit of that rub for those two, the Rumble and Elimination Chamber. And like I said, I think it was just something that was different. And, and we were prepared to, you know... There's a lot of times where we were attacking guys, and it looked pretty vicious because it was pretty vicious. And like I think it was something that like caught people off guard. They had been so used to seeing this kind of like sterilized, sort of boring. It was just something. Mm-hmm. Something you just infused some new energy. It was just a different type of energy when our music hit and we came through the crowd. That looked different.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I don't know if anybody had really done that since Sandman. I can't think of it off of them. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't think
I don't
of anybody.
Think so. Right.
We come through the crowd and like we were doing 6-man tag matches, which are extremely popular over in Japan and Mexico. Right, because there's 6 guys, you can do a lot. There's a lot more with 6 guys mm-hmm. than you can with 2, as far as just like pacing and stuff like that. And so, but over here, those in this company, no one had really cornered that market per se. The 6-man tags were kind of just relegated to like, okay, it's the Raw before the pay per view.
That's got right.
3
yeah.
big matches
thrown together.
So
yeah,
just put them all together, and like you know, everyone just kind of does their stuff, and you've advanced the storylines, and it's great. But like. As an attraction, the 6-man match had never really been a thing here that I can think of. So, like, Ambrose and I both, just from, you know, being in Ring of Honor and him in Dragon Gate, we just had the experience of doing multi-man matches and structuring them properly and, mm-hmm. like, the pacing of it and stuff like that. And, at the time we were doing a lot with Daniel Bryan as well, and he was just starting to get crazy with the Yes thing and like all of his energetic sort of comeback and offense and stuff like that. And like
great chemistry with him.
We just had really good chemistry with him, and the dynamic between Roman and Kane and stuff like that.
So who was it? Was Daniel and Kane, and then who was the third guy?
Anybody.
Oh, literally, just whoever.
They would, if you go back in that period of time, you'll find like a Kofi, you'll find a Randy when he was
just
a good guy. You find whoever they would want to put in there, you know what I mean?
And there was a lot with Cody and Dustin too, right?
Yeah, and we had six mans with Cody.
Great
and
matches
Dustin,
with them
the
too.
Usos, all like the best thing about it is it didn't matter like who was in there. There was just we had that six man match mm-hmm. down. Like we were great at it. And like I said, it was just something that like people just hadn't seen and they were not familiar with it. And the energy of it, you can like I said, you just do so much more. And we were mm-hmm. able to kind of have this pace that I think catered to our fans and just like our younger fan base, because let's face it, attention spans are shorter, matches
Great
are
point.
Shorter, people, you know what I mean? Like when there's not action, it's very easy to look at your phone to flip the channel.
That's a great point, man.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's just, I think that match just catered to kind of what people were looking for in this era of I can get everything all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like all that kind of, it was a good timing. And
yeah, absolutely.
We were given great opportunities. Not a lot of guys coming up get those opportunities, but we also never knocked them out of the park every time.
Once
never
again, we were ready to go.
Yeah, we never had a situation where they're like, here you go, it's your guys' time, and then we come back and they're like, oh, you know, I don't know about these guys. It was always like, okay, you're up, bases loaded by the ninth, boom, home run. Boom,
how did you feel when they started to bring up the idea of you guys splitting up?
We said no. We stopped it. We put a
Wow, so you kind of kiboshed it a few times.
One major time for sure, yeah. They had discussed it leading into, I don't know if you'll remember, but there was like, we were doing some 3-on-1 matches with Punk after like, we did one at a TLC pay-per-view, and then we were gonna go, like it was, so Roman had the big Survivor Series, like mm-hmm. where he like, was the star of that and like speared everybody
right.
and was a sole survivor. And from that, they were going to kind of start to split us a little bit. And they wanted us to like be prepared for that. They didn't know when it was going to happen. So we kind of started like talking about it. But we were like, at this point, we'd been going for over a year, I think. Yeah, over a year. And we were like, you know, we got a babyface running us here somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we've been doing
yeah,
this heel
right,
stuff for
right.
a year. But we were like, hey, we're like, people are. They like us a little bit, you know what I mean? We're kind of awesome.
Because it's so cool.
Yeah, we're kind of awesome. We're these. All we are is these. You know, we're not cowardly heels. We're these awesome bad
Kicking
guys.
Ass, great matches.
Yeah.
Look cool.
Yeah. Like,
what's the hate?
Super wet. So like, how can you? You know, the guys were like, yeah, these are our dudes, and the girls, you know, were like, hey,
good looking guys. Yeah.
Why not? So like, we were primed for a babyface run here, and they were like, hey, you know, I don't know, and we put a huge kibosh on that split after, you know, the
Did you ever have
Survivor
to go talk
series.
To Vince about it?
Yeah, we did.
Got that far.
Yeah, we did. And we told him why, and we're like, hey, look, here's the thing. And they went with it for a little while, clearly, because we were going into WrestleMania that year. We had kind of flipped the switch. We were doing a lot of infighting, like backstage and stuff like mm-hmm. that, especially between Roman and Dean. We're kind of like butting heads a lot in the backstage and stuff like that. And then, like, finally, we talked to him, we got it all settled, and then we were moving forward. We worked with Kane and the Outlaws at WrestleMania, and if anybody remembers that match, it was like 3 seconds
3 minutes,
long.
Yeah. Did you guys get time cut on that, or was it always designated to
no,
be short?
No. It was when we started, like when they said, oh, here's your match, I remember like 2 or 3 weeks before it, we were excited for it because, I mean, you work with Outlaws and Kane at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And they're like, oh, you're going to have, you know, a little bit of time, like 15 to 17, you know what I mean? Like, oh,
wow.
Awesome. This is going to be great because – we're just, you know, we're going to tear it up. You know, we worked with Brian and Billy over in Europe on one of the tours. And, dude, those guys were a blast to be
Easy,
in the ring
right?
with. They're a
yeah.
blast to be in the ring with. And so we were stoked. And then, you know, as the show approached, we started getting cut down more and more and more. And then the first segment of WrestleMania this year was Rock,
right.
Steve,
and
Hogan.
Hogan.
And I knew. I'm like, oh, we're getting chopped down.
If they go over, which they will, someone's taking the fall.
Yeah, and we're going. Yeah, we're getting chopped because they had the Battle Royal too, which was like right after that.
Uh-huh.
So it was like they were just chopping stuff down, and like I knew we were going to get. So we ended up with. They're like, oh, all right, you got 3 minutes. You know what I mean? You're not even gonna get a full entrance. You're gonna get a core carry on your entrance and all this stuff. And you know, so it was like, all right, cool. So we made the most of it, and it was a lot of fun. Anytime you're out there in front of 80,000
do the best
people,
you can.
It's a great time.
And that's the thing. Some nights you have the opportunity to steal the show, and some nights you don't. And that's just the way it is. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Right. I think people don't understand that sometimes.
Right.
If you're not,
Yeah.
They don't get that. They think like, oh, well, it's only a 2-star match. Why did he do that tonight? I'm like, well, you just don't get that opportunity every night. You know what I mean?
You don't get the time. You don't get the angle.
Yeah.
You don't get the focus.
Yeah, and it's you can't try to force
right.
You can't try to force that kind of match out of a 3-minute match.
Impossible.
You're not doing yourself justice or the match justice there's a lot that goes into it. I don't think as that kind of stuff that people don't understand that. So
that's right. Yeah.
That's interesting actually. Now that I think about it.
So you guys, you mentioned that then they finally decided to break up the team. And then Roman goes his way. And I thought it was cool that they didn't have Roman go one way and then you guys stay as a tag team.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of lame. Everybody kind of went their own direction, which I thought if you're going to break it up, that was the way to do it.
Yeah, we thought the same thing. Because we were like, look, clearly the way they had the way Roman's year was, they had positioned him to be in a certain position once we split up. But Ambrose and I were like, look, don't forget about us, but you're not going to be able to forget about us. Like, don't just throw us by the wayside. Like, look, we're going to give us our own things and we'll be just fine. You know what I mean? So like that was totally the way to do it. And, I was actually very pleased with the way it came out. We had those two matches with, Evolution at the pay-per-views, Payback and, whatever the one is right after WrestleMania, Extreme Rules.
Mm-hmm.
And those were really fun. Working with those guys and stuff like that, you know, that's one of those where like I've gotten the opportunity to have so many crazy matches in the first few years that I like, never thought I would. I mean, I got to be like to be in the ring with the Undertaker. You know what I mean?
Wow,
like,
yeah,
that's crazy to think about for me. Like, because that's a guy I thought would be retired long before I ever had an opportunity to step in a WWE ring. But then to have like to be able to, you know, we had a match with him on a Raw in London one of the nights.
Yeah, that's right.
See, there's another partner they could just stick in with anybody, right?
Yeah, totally.
It was Kane Bryan and the Undertaker against the Shield. Like,
it's a pretty big match.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's nuts. In a sold out O2, like that's nuts. For me, anyway. I don't know.
For anybody.
That's crazy.
For anybody.
Then you get the opportunity, you know, they say, hey, we're going to have you work with Evolution for a pay-per-view. And it's like, what?
You go, yeah.
Evolution's not even
Hunter,
a thing
Batista,
right now.
Orton. Yeah. Right. They made that thing for you.
Yeah. Like, dude, that's awesome. So, like, we did that. It went so well. Batista had so much fun that he's like, all right, I think I'll stick around. Let's do another one. So he did another one for us, which was very cool of him. He didn't have to do that. And so we did the second one, and then we did the split right at the night after that, and things have been going, in my opinion, extremely well for all of
us. Great. You guys tore the house down a couple weeks ago, you and Ambrose, in that, I can't remember, was it Street Fight or whatever the match was on Raw?
Yep.
Great
in Vegas,
match.
Yep.
You know, like you said, you're on a roll, but the coolest thing is, I mean, you win the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, you got the briefcase, which you have to carry around everywhere, which I get a kick out of, makes me laugh.
I'm thinking the only one that doesn't get a kick out of that thing. I walk to the airports and then
and the best thing is it's got the big Money in the Bank thing on the side of it.
Yeah, it's clearly like it's funny. I was in my own airport the other day and somebody this lady I don't know what she was on, but she was like, "Is there really a monkey in there?" And I was like, "It was 5 a.m. and I'm like, "What are you? What? There's a monkey in there?" And I'm like, and I look at it and I'm like, "Oh." I'm like, "Lady, it says money." She's like, "Oh, well, I think you could fit a monkey in there anyway." Yeah, monkey in the bank?
Monkey in the bank.
What?
Didn't even say monkey in the case.
No, nothing.
Right.
There's nothing about a monkey. Like, where'd you see this K at? Because I can't find it anywhere.
But the thing that's cool about it is, like, throughout the lineage of Money in the Banks, I think there's maybe one or two now, but most of the time when you get that Money in the Bank, you cash it in and you become the champion. So, you know, I'm sure there's been a couple guys that didn't get it. As a matter of fact, I know there's a couple. I think Sando, maybe even Cena.
Cena didn't do it.
But it's still pretty cool to know that, like, there's a chance at some point you could walk out as the champion.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's a pretty sweet vote of confidence, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, to have that and, like I said, you look at the past, the percentage is pretty high for the cash-ins and stuff like that. And so, I mean, now, you know, Lesnar's he's not here quite as often, and he may not be the guy to cash in on, but I think I got till next July.
Yeah, you got some time.
That. So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty sweet thing. Like, it's the best, like, the case, I say, is like the best, worst thing to have. Yeah. You know, the best, it's a burden to carry around and, you know, even in an airport, but, like, at the same time, I would not want to have it. You know,
it's a champagne problem, we call it.
Yeah.
I remember when I had I won the Undisputed title. It was two titles, two belts, and I had to carry both of them. And as you know, those titles are heavy. Extremely. So having two of them, and then, like you said, you got to take it out of the thing to go through security. And at 7 in the morning, hey, look at this. Charlie's a champion. He's two champions. Come over here. You got 15 people gathered around. I just want to catch the flight to Peoria. Can I get the hell out of here?
Yeah, right.
But it's like, on the other hand, they could take it away from you. Because when I lost it, my bag was really light, and I was pretty sad.
The first time you pick it up, you're like, oh,
this sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mentioned to you yesterday, another thing that I thought was pretty pretty cool is you actually have your own wrestling school.
Yeah,
which within the world of WWE, where they have a whole performance center, it's pretty cool that they let you do this.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised that they gave me that opportunity and were so, like, forthcoming with, like, hey, yeah, we're, you know, we want to help you. We can, you know, tweet about it. We can, you know, put a piece on our website, interview you for that. And I was like,
it's great.
Yeah, it is great. I was like taken aback a little bit by it, because if you look at it, it's and I don't know if I've ever done it for Santino's got one in Toronto, mm-hmm. and Booker has his thing down in Houston, but I don't think there's any other ones, any other active, you know.
No, not where people actually affiliated. What's the name of your school?
It's a Black and Brave Wrestling Academy.
Black and Brave.
Which is an ode to me and my tag team partner that I broke in with, who's the co-trainer there, Merrick Brave.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Black, Merrick Brave. We had a very creative tag team name when we broke in.
As Black and Brave.
Black and the Brave. Just two kids trying to make it. Yeah, it's cool, man. We're about three weeks in now to our first class. And, like, it's one of those things where, like, I really didn't know what I was doing as far as, like, from a business sense, like, or how to, like, structure it, but I was like, I just gotta jump in, like, mm-hmm. otherwise I'm like, I can do all this planning and stuff like that, but
just
really,
go for it.
Yeah, really, I should just jump in and, like, we'll figure it out as we go, and then it'll be. I don't think it's gonna suck, is the thing. So I'm doing it in my local, like, my gym, which is a CrossFit gym.
This is in Davenport, Iowa.
The school is actually in Moline, Illinois, Illinois. Is right by Davenport, okay. Quad City area. It's like right across the river, Mississippi River. So, but the gym itself is in Moline, Illinois. There's a CrossFit there called Quad City CrossFit, and I've been with them for a while, and they're cool enough to let me set the ring up and train the guys there. And, like, the students are members of the gym, so they have access to all the classes and all the nutrition stuff that they have. And it's a really cool deal, I think. I think it's hard. That's the one thing that I think my students – like, they thought it was going to be difficult, I think, but I don't think they understood, like, you know what I mean?
The training part of it?
The training and, like, just all the stuff that goes into it, like, you know, because they train 3 days a week, and then they're encouraged to go to the independent shows on the weekends nearby and help set up the ring and just, you know, get in the ring and roll around if they can and just, you know, be a fly on the wall, essentially. That's kind of how you learn when you first start. And so they're encouraged to do that, and then they got to, you know, they got to train three, four days a week. Yeah, actually work out, like, not in ring. So, like, and I told them right off the get-go, I'm like, look, this is going to be probably the hardest thing you've ever had to do. You got to understand that. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very small percentage of people who, you know, A, can make this their living and be very successful at it, and B, just human beings who can handle this kind of grind.
Right.
Like, even if you're even, you know, I told them success doesn't mean that you're a huge superstar. It just means that, you know, you're happy with what you're doing and you're enjoying your life. You know what I'm saying? And this is something that I assume is a dream for all of you. And I'm hoping that, you know, this will help you along that path. And I don't think, like, we've had a few people quit, and I just don't think that they understood, like, how difficult is. And I think that's another thing we're talking about, things people don't really understand about, like, our business. And one of them is it's really hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's really hard. Like, you know, I was reading, The other day I saw like Joe Rogan had said something about like...
I spent some time trying to figure out a really cool tweet to hit him back with, but I thought, I don't want to start a war with this.
Yeah.
He said that wrestling was fake and people are stupid if they like it, something like that.
Yeah, and he had like no respect for it or something like that. And I was like, come on, man. Like, and Joe's someone who's like, I've listened to his podcast and he's a fairly educated dude, you know what I mean? And like he's well-spoken. And like to me, like that's just like buffoonery. It's just like dumb. Like,
it's a stupid statement to make. And I'm glad you brought it up. It's a stupid statement because, A, he's in entertainment.
Yeah.
He's in showbiz. He's a stand-up comic.
Right.
He also does MMA stuff. He knows what this is.
Yeah.
And this isn't 1979 where we're claiming, that's just, I mean, it's real, but it's show business. And we all know this.
Yeah, we're not, exactly. We're not trying to tell you it's something it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that charade's gone long ago.
Right.
And, I mean, you and I are sitting here talking right now.
Yeah, exactly. So. After having a blood feud last night.
Right. But it's like, it's fine. It's okay. It's better this way. You know what I mean? But like, it's still hard. And to say you don't respect it or that it's fake, it's just asinine.
But for no reason. It's not like someone came on his show and they got an argument. It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was very strange. I think somebody just asked him like his opinion on it or something like that.
I guess.
Like, dumped on it.
Be like if you, I just tweeted like, you know, we hate, you know, horse racing. All the jockeys are stupid and we have no respect for, like, why would you say that?
Yeah,
you
know? It's very strange. I think he like chalked it up to like, oh, he was weird because I think he chalked it up to being like, oh, he's just being funny or he's in show business like that. But it's like, eh, whatever, man. It sounds like a cop out.
Well, it was like you said, it was kind of lame. But do you spend a lot of time at the school actually on hands on training?
So we do Tuesday. We structured the training so I can kind of be there as much as possible. Right. So we do the training like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Which are the days that you're home?
I'm home Wednesday, Thursday every week, usually, barring some sort of appearance or an international tour or whatever. So I try to stop in Wednesday and Thursday night and hang out with them and, you know, just little things here and there. The bulk of the training is handled by Merrick. He does most of the training.
Which is fair, though.
Yeah, I have assistant trainer Shane Hollister, who's an active independent wrestler in the Midwest, and he does well for himself. These are just dudes that I grew up with, and we just loved wrestling. Mm-hmm. And they're both really good, extremely talented guys. They just never had the drive.
It happens, man. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
They love it, you know what I mean? But, like, they just never, whatever it was, they didn't get the opportunities or they didn't have the passion. They had, you know, they're both, one's engaged, about to have a kid, the other's got, you know, married.
The sacrifice to be on the road, which is another thing that people understand how hard that is.
Yeah, it is very difficult. And, like, people, I mean, I try to be pretty cool with the fans and stuff like that, but sometimes they don't understand, like, when we get, like, off a plane and we're in the airport and, like, I don't think they understand what goes into, like, guys, I'm going on no sleep. Like, I'm just trying to get food and get to the show, or I've got to go train, or, like, I'm not trying to be rude to you. Like, I promise. Like, I really appreciate all of your, you know, love and stuff like that. And we really couldn't do this without you. But, like,
I need some time.
Yeah. Like, I just need a little space right now. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I think there's just a lot that, like, you know, people don't understand, that the public doesn't understand about kind of what goes into what we
do. That's right. When you leave your house, a lot of times you're on the whole time because people will see you and people want to say hi, which is cool.
Yeah.
But the thing that gets me is when you go to the airport after a long flight, or you arrive at, you know, whatever, 1:30 in the morning or something, or 7:30 in the morning, and there'll be people waiting with 5, 6, 7 things. Like, hey, if I meet, you know, Paul McCartney and he signs one thing for me, I'm happy. I'm
stoked,
done.
Right?
Thank you, Mr. McCartney. See you later. Can you sign this one? Can you sign this one? Can you sign it? Like, no, you got two. That's it. I'm not a jerk now. You are now the jerk.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. You've become the jerk.
That's right.
I'm not being mean to you.
That's right, man. So what's the website or at Facebook for your school?
Yeah,
for
it's just blackandbravewrestling.com.
Okay.
We have a Twitter. It's the same. I think it's just at Black and Brave. You can, if you go to blackandbravewrestling.com, all the information you need is on there. We're starting our second class in January. This first one will finish up, like, I think right before Thanksgiving or so, and then we'll take the holiday off. I don't want to
move
kids away from their home right before Christmas.
How long is every session?
It's about the class, you mean?
Well, I mean, if you start, you said in January,
it's 12 weeks.
Okay.
About 12 weeks. And you'll have the option to stay on and train more if you need to after you're done or whatever, or if you want to, however it may be. So, it's about a 12-week program. And like I said, it's not affiliated with WWE. I want to get that out of the way here. It's not like they said, hey, we want to, you know, camp in Moline, Illinois. We're going to set this up. It's going to be just like the Performance Center. It's not like that, all right? I trained in like a shipping warehouse in Chicago in the brutal winter. Like,
I trained in a bowling alley.
Exactly right. Like we're just in a cruddy CrossFit gym, which is good. It's a good as far as CrossFit gyms are concerned. So don't expect like, you know, to walk in and see Triple H just hanging out here working out. That's not that's not what it is. It's something that I personally wanted to do. When I was trying to break in the Midwest, it was very difficult at the time to find a suitable trainer, someone that was, you know, A, going to be talented enough and understand how to articulate to me how to be a pro wrestler, and someone who's going to kind of help me afterwards and take care of me and stuff like that, as far as like taking me to shows and getting me bookings and getting me started and stuff like that. It was very hard to do that, to the point where I tried to, like, when I first started training, I moved out to Pennsylvania to train with Punk. He was doing the Ring of Honor school at the time. I went out there with all this, like, thinking, okay, I want to get trained by the best. I'm going to go out there. But I was 18. I didn't know how to – I had no idea of, like, how to procure a proper job and, like, save – I didn't save any money, and, like, it didn't work out. But when I came back, I was like, I still want to get trained. I just don't – where? Like, where do I do this? So I figured I was visible enough as far as, like, that scene is concerned that I could help out people who were interested in, you know, starting a career in pro wrestling.
Well, and that's the thing too. I find people say, I'm going to a school. Well, who's the trainer? Oh, you know, Gladiator Mike LeDrew. And it's like, never really heard of it. Nothing against the Gladiator Mike LeDrew, if that's even a guy.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to go to a school, I want to go to Seth Rollins school or Lance Storm school or Booker T school or Dudley school, where there's a guy that, or whoever, that I know this guy has actually made it.
Yeah.
And if you're there twice a week or once a week or five times a week, you're still there, and that's where people can really figure out, you know, what you know, which is important.
Yeah, and I like I said, I try to be there as much as I can, and it's cool to, like, just work out with the kids and that, and just get a feel for them as people and stuff like that. And I think it's encouraging when I'm there too, because they get the opportunity to, like, you know, I'm from that area, so, like, I get to come back, and it's very, like, I feel like they might have, like, an image of me, and they see me on TV in a certain light, and then they just get to see me, you know.
Yeah, you're playing a character.
Yeah, doing a bunch of snatches and sweating and laying on the floor and wanting to punch myself in the face.
Final question. What's your favorite match that you ever had? Let me make it two. Your favorite match that you ever had in the WWE system and your favorite match you ever had in the ROH system.
All right. My favorite match that I ever had in the WWE system was a 30-minute Iron Man match with Dean Ambrose down in FCW.
Wow.
Yeah, that was that may be my favorite match that I've ever
really
had.
In Tampa at the center that they used to have there.
Yep, and it was a television match. It was just in that little tiny building, just right in there. But Ambrose and I, we had never worked before. We both got to developmental.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because we worked in separate circles. Like, we were all coming up kind of at the same time, but he was doing his thing on the East Coast, and I was in the Midwest, and we never really crossed paths, like, aside from being on a show or two here and there. Then we both got to developmental, and they were like, oh, they're both independent wrestlers. Let's put them together. You know, and we were head and shoulders, really, as far as, like, in-ring work was considered above everybody else. So, like, and we had, like, an instant chemistry, like you were talking about earlier with you and I. Like, it was the same thing. Like, you just get in there.
Feel it right
and
away.
It's just, it's so easy. It's like you feel like you had 1,000 matches with this guy.
Yeah.
And we did, like, 2 15-minute Iron Man matches, because that was, like, a gimmick they had down there for a while. It was, like, a championship. It was, like, a 15-minute Iron Man match. We did two of them that were, like, we did a 15 and a 20, and they were both draws. And then we did, like, the big 30-minute one. Ended up going into overtime or whatever. But that was my favorite one
in the WWE
system. And then my favorite outside of that was probably Death Before Dishonor, whatever number, against Davey Richards in Toronto. I don't remember what the building was. I remember it was, like, the middle of summer, and it was so hot. Like, just 1,000 degrees. And Davey's excellent. I think he's in TNA now,
right,
with
Eddie Edwards.
They're doing the Wolves there. But Davey's insane, and his, like, his conditioning is, he's a very little guy. Let me just point that out. He's much smaller than me, so he doesn't get blown up quite as easy. But I made it a point to, like, keep up with him during that match, and the crowd was insane. It was just one of those matches where it was like everything was just clicking.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was probably my favorite non-WWE match.
Cool,
there,
man. Well, I appreciate it, man. It's good to have you. Money in the Bank winner. Carry that briefcase around
proudly.
Do you ever put anything in there?
Yeah, I have some stuff in there. I mean, I carry it on. Like, I have to put, I can't check that thing. It'll never come back, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I carry it on, so I've got to put something in there. I've got, like, I sound like an old man now. I got, like, my lumbar pillow. I've got my cervical pillow. I got my headphones and, like, a book or something like
that. I did a house show once when Ziegler had it, and I stole the case from him, and I opened it up so people could see, and there was a pair of sunglasses and two quarters in it. and I got in trouble from the agent. He's like, you can't do that. Don't do that ever again.
Oh, for
heaven's
sake.
I was like, okay.
How was I supposed to know there were two quarters
right.
in
Come
there?
Come on. Thanks, dude.
That's awesome.
Thanks to Seth Rollins. What an amazing performer. Top heel in the WWE right now and just killed it at the Survivor Series this past week. Thumbs up to him, and I expect him to be a main event mainstay in the WWE for a long, long time. Future world champion, and when the time comes for me to return to the WWE, I would love to do a long extended program with Seth. And I might be returning to the WWE sooner than you think, but it's going to be in a way that nobody's ever done it before. I do things different from everybody else. Remember that. I am different from everybody else, and that's why you love me, and that's why you listen to the show, and that's why you go do your online shopping through Talk Is Jericho Amazon links. It's the easiest way to support the show. You know I appreciate it. You know I love to love you, baby. And you know where to find my links right now, right? You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you click on Talk Is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, and Canada. A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, and you're helping me out in the process. All right, that's another fun, fun-filled edition of Talk Is Jericho. In the meantime and in between time, we want you to stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you Friday for VH1 Mob Wives star Renee Graziano. She's got stories, behind-the-scenes stories, about growing up in a mafioso family. Plus, I will tell you the entire story about the Brazil flag-kicking incident and how I was suspended by Vince McMahon from the WWE, cast out in disgrace. All of that, so much more, will be here on Friday. We'll see you then. Thank you so much. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk Is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.